This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Award-winning poet Archie Randolph Ammons, known as A.R. to legions of devoted readers, would have celebrated his 85th birthday today. Ammons' work is admired for its use of accessible language to capture the natural world and infuse it with a high-minded sense of wonder. Listen to him read his short poem called Winter Scene.
There is now not a single leaf on the cherry tree, except when the jay plummets in, lights, and in pure clarity squalls. Then every branch quivers and breaks out in blue leaves.
A.R. Ammons was born near Whiteville, North Carolina, and raised with his siblings on a modest family farm. He served in the Navy, then went to Wake Forest University. Ammons was a teacher and the principal at Hatteras Elementary School, eventually joined the faculty of Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. He taught there from 1964 until his death in 2001. Ammons won a number of prizes, including two National Book Awards, a Frost Medal, and fellowships from the Guggenheim Foundation and the American Academy of Arts and Letters. As part of our series, North Carolina Literary Lights, we're focusing today on the life and work of A.R. Ammons. Joining me in the studio is Alex Albright. He's a poet and associate professor of English and creative writing at East Carolina University and the editor of several volumes of poetry, including the North Carolina Poems by A.R. Ammons. And with us from a studio in Ithaca is Roger Gilbert. He's a professor of English at Cornell, author of the book Walks in the World, Representation and Experience in Modern American Poetry, currently working on a critical biography of A.R. Ammons. Welcome to both of you. Good to have
you
here.
Thanks. Great.
Roger, tell us what life was like on the farm for Ammons with his parents and siblings.
Well, it was a hard life. It was a small farm. They were trying to raise tobacco, which is, as I'm sure you know, a backbreaking process that requires a lot of work and doesn't always bring a lot of reward. So they were constantly in debt and on the verge of bankruptcy. A very difficult life and constantly subject to the whims of the weather. That was something that Archie remembered being, an ongoing concern. The weather could just ruin the crop overnight.
And you wrote quite a bit about Eastern North Carolina and growing up there. Alex, give us the lay of the land in that part of southeastern North Carolina.
Oh, it's flat, swampy. You got the Black Rivers. You look in the guides to wildflowers, and you find the descriptions of most of the wildflowers that we have. It'll say thrives in the wastelands of Eastern Carolina.
So you get the picture. Will you read a poem for us? The poem I Was Born In.
Yeah, this is a poem that comes from a very long scroll that Archie typed on. He had a habit of typing his poems on long scrolls, much like the legendary Kerouac on the road. But Archie played with different sizes of scrolls. And this particular scroll is at East Carolina Manuscripts down there. And this poem is actually a little excerpt from an 18-foot-long poem. So this one is called I Was Born In, and it's for Archie on his birthday. I was born in Whiteville, a southern place. I can remember when the sidewalks were planks over muddy holes and when the stores were tin-roofed shacks. At least some of them, the stores. Then Leaders was built, a big department store in the middle of the block. But not right in Whiteville. Go about a mile on past Soul's Swamp to South Whiteville, south where the road forks off to New Brunswick. But keep on straight. Pretty soon a dirt road splits off to the right. Go that way, far back in there, after some turnings and windings, sand hills and branches. You come around a curve and go up a little. There's the place on the right, the pecan tree and pear tree still standing. But no house, no mother or father, just where it all used to be. Isn't that just like life?
It's Alex Albright reading the poem I Was Born In by A.R. Ammons. That last line, isn't that just like life? Alex, how would you characterize Ammons' relationship with his hometown?
He never really got away from it spiritually. He was away from North Carolina most of his career. He was in Jersey for a while, but at Cornell most of his poet Richard's life. And he always talked about coming back, but I don't know. There was something about being from here that he carried with him very specially. And I'm not sure if coming back would have worked. He couldn't, you know, what he had here was kind of in a time capsule or something. He kept that, as Roger said, the memories of that farm in that place, and the weather, the book, The Snow Poems, you know, it was clearly out of that experience. You know, people, we think we've conquered the weather these days, but yeah, you know, Archie was someone who knew that we hadn't and that we couldn't.
And Roger, it was a complicated relationship. You know, Alex says he carried it with him. It infuses his poems, and yet there was a sense that he had to keep his distance from this place. Would you say?
I think so. I think it was because he had some very painful memories associated with that time of his life, beginning with just the trauma of seeing all of these beloved animals die, some of them because they had to be eaten, some of them because they just got old. But of course, he also had two younger brothers who died when he was small. His mother died when he was still a very young man. The farm had to be sold eventually. So it was a place that was infused with a sense of loss. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why it was hard for him to go back. He did go back. He made regular pilgrimages, but there was always a certain pain involved.
We talked about his relationship with the farm animals. Alex, I wonder if you would mind reading another poem, this one called Mule Song.
Sure, I'd be glad to. This is from a little chapbook that we put out last year, kind of an homage to Archie. It's called The Mule Songs. The book, a little book, is called The Mule Songs by A.R. Ammons, and this one is called Mule Song. Mule Song. Silver will lie where she lies, sun out, whatever turning the world does, long-eared in her ashen, earless, floating world. Indifferent to sores and green age colic, where oats need not come to, bleached by crystals of her trembling time, beyond all brunt of seasons, blind forever to all blinds, inhabited by brooks, still she may wraith over broken fields after winter, or roll in the rye green fields. Old mule, no defense but a mule's against disease, large ribbed, flat toothed, sold to a stranger, shot by a stranger's hand, not my hand she nuzzled the seasoning salt from.
Alex Albright reading a poem by A.R. Ammons called Mule Song. Roger, Gilbert, A.R. Ammons manages to convey a kind of lyricism about rural life without romanticizing it. Would you say that's something that characterized his work?
Yes, I would say that. I think he disliked sentimentality. He wanted to get as close as he could to the earth and to the creatures and plants of the earth. I mean, that's one of the hallmarks of his poetry, the intimacy with physical life and physical beings that he achieves. And of course, the mule is a great example of that. He knew this mule. He and this mule were great friends. They spent many, many hours together, and he wanted to convey exactly what Silver was like for those of us who didn't get a chance to meet him.
And, of course, mules are pretty darn important to farm life those days. I suppose they still are if you're running that kind of farm. But, Alex, the mule was vital to
Oh, certainly, to yeah. And, yeah, there are some people that will tell you once the water goes bad and the gas goes away that the man that can run a mule will be the most valuable man alive. But, you know, certainly in Down East, the mule economy really thrived much longer than people realize. It was the small one-mule farm was into the 60s and really until a lot of the farms were getting sort of transformed by banks. And the big agri industry was starting to come in, but the mule was the really vital link to getting labor, you know, and sufficient to maybe make a profit to make a little bit more than what you really needed. And as Roger said, Archie was so close to these animals. You know, that's one of his heartbreaking poems. He has to prepare for the killing of the hog, and at the same time he's turning his joreet loose, this bird that he's kept all summer, and you know, it's this really painful, sad mingling of the turning loose of the thing that you love into the wild, and then the slaughtering the other.
There is this deep spiritual connection to the land, and yet, Roger, he was also engaged in scientific process and used a lot of that kind of language in his poetry.
Yes, he did. He was in fact a science major in college. He went to Wake Forest and was a general science major, but particularly liked courses in botany. He had a teacher named Bud Smith, whom he often thanked for having taught him so much of what he ended up using in his poetry. So I think science was a way of getting some distance on the sheer hard physical reality of life on the farm, seeing it from another angle, seeing it as part of a larger ecology and planet and solar system and so on.
What is his relationship to religion? How would you describe that?
Well, he was a very regular churchgoer as a boy, of course, as just about anyone would be in that part of North Carolina. He and his family attended the fire-baptized Pentecostal Holiness Church. Lots of hymn singing, some speaking in tongues, sermons, of course. But it was the hymns that I think stayed with him the most. And he would often say that they were the first poetry he heard, and they left a very deep impression on his own poetry, the language, the imagery, the tone of reverence and wonder. You see that everywhere in his poetry.
Well, he wrote a poem called Hymn. When we come back after this short break, we'll hear that in his own voice as we continue our examination of the life and work of A.R. Ammons with Alex Albright of ECU, Roger Gilbert from Cornell. After a short break, A.R. Ammons and the worlds of music and science on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. Broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today, talking about the poetry of A.R. Ammons with Alex Albright from East Carolina University, Roger Gilbert of Cornell. Ammons was born and grew up in eastern North Carolina. He is one of the State of Things literary lights. Before the break, we were talking about Ammons' relationship to the church and spirituality. Roger Gilbert mentioned a poem called Hymn. Let's listen now as A.R. Ammons reads that poem.
I know if I find you, I will have to leave the earth and go on out over the sea marshes and the brant and bays and over the hills of tall hickory and over the crater lakes and canyons and on up through the spheres of diminishing air past the black set noctilucent clouds where one wants to stop and look way past all the light diffusions and bombardments, up farther than the loss of sight, into the unseasonal, undifferentiated, empty, stark. And I know if I find you, I will have to stay with the earth, inspecting with thin tools and ground eyes, trusting the microvilli, sporangia, and simplest selenorates, and praying for a nerve cell with all the soul of my chemical reactions, and going right on down where the eye sees only traces. You are everywhere partial and entire. You are on the inside of everything and on the outside. I walk down the path, down the hill, where the sweet gum has begun to ooze spring sap at the cut, and I see how the bark cracks and whines like no other bark, chasmal to my aunt soul, running up and down. And if I find you, I must go out deep into your far resolutions, and if I find you, I must stay here with the separate leaves.
A.R. Ammons reading his poem, Hymn. A.R. Ammons, one of North Carolina's literary lights. Roger Gilbert, we talked about his spirituality a little bit, growing up in those charismatic churches where people spoke in tongues and gave fiery sermons, certainly something that influenced him early. But he had a kind of turning point in the Navy when his ideas about God became more crystallized. Can you tell us that story?
That's true. Yes, he was on a destroyer escort. He was a sonar operator, and they were out in the South Pacific. And at some point, they were moored outside of a small island. And he just remembered having a kind of vision of all of the you know, everything he could see, the island, the water, the ocean, the sky, and seeing them as related to one another without necessarily being under the control of some kind of higher figure. He spoke of it as not quite losing religion, but as just seeing the world in a different way. He was a kind of non-believer in any traditional sense, and yet, as that poem I think shows, the impulse to address some kind of higher force or presence was always there for him.
And he does it, Alex, in this wonderful way, this great use of highly scientific, almost esoteric scientific language to express these deep philosophical, spiritual ideas of oneness and togetherness.
That's one of his fascinations with language, I think, was making poetry out of words that people don't think of as being in poems, and trying to show. I think it's becoming a little more fashionable idea to see the poetry in science. But he was seeing that and trying to talk about that in very interesting ways, almost from the beginning.
Tell us a little bit about his growing up and the kind of education he had, Roger Gilbert. Who were the influences on him as a young man?
Well, he had a very big family, lots and lots of aunts and uncles and cousins. But he also had a few teachers who were very, very important to him, both in elementary school and in high school, who recognized that he had certain special gifts and encouraged him, even though I think he felt kind of, you know, socially inferior coming from a small, poor farm and attending school in town. Those teachers really helped to get him going and convince him that he had a calling as a writer.
How did he do that, and how did they do that? Was that anything, you know, when you think about this hardscrabble sustenance farm, the idea of encouraging someone to be a poet or a writer seems a little far-fetched. What was going on there? How did they do that?
Well, there's a funny story. I think Alex has probably heard this from Archie, too. He liked to talk about how when he was in, I think it was the eighth grade, they had an assignment to write essays based on articles they found in the Reader's Digest, and he picked an article about a miniature cow that was being bred that could give vast quantities of milk. And for some reason, the teacher thought that his essay was absolutely superb and read it to the whole class and read it to her other classes. And I'm just fascinated by what I unfortunately, the essay no longer seems to exist. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what exactly he did to make it so extraordinary. But it's interesting that this was the topic he chose, a sort of miniature animal that managed to nonetheless produce great things. I'm sure that he identified with that in some ways.
Music also a very important part of his life. And again, if you think about those churches, a Pentecostal church, would have been a lot of music and a lot of singing. And we, in fact, have a recording of A.R. Ammons singing a hymn. Let's listen.
Oh, when the saints, marching in. When the saints go marching in, oh Lord, I want to be in that number when the saints go marching in.
There we have A.R. Ammons singing When the Saints Go Marching In. Roger Gilbert, was Ammons playing the piano as well?
Yes, he was. He loved to play the piano. He loved to play hymns at the piano. He said once that when he sat down at the piano and played those old hymns, he felt that he was at home.
Did he talk and write much about music and its influence on his work?
I think so. I think music was important to him. There are various musical references throughout his work. He liked to make his own music. He liked to play the piano. He played Beethoven and hymns, and he improvised. So, in general, he liked to create his own works of art in every medium.
Alex, would you read another poem for us? This one's about singing, called China Berry.
Yeah, this is a poem. I thank Roger for it's from the North Carolina Poems by A.R. Ammons. It missed the first edition of this, which has been out of print. North Carolina Wesleyan College Press put it out in 94. But I missed this poem. It appeared in a small magazine. And thanks to Roger's good detective work working on this biography, he shared this with me. And it's a description of a scene in Archie's home, and there are three lines in it. My friend is the king, oh, where is my wandering boy tonight, and on the top of Mount Zion is a city, that are references to actual songs. And I think everything else is pretty self-explanatory here. The poem is called China Berry. Out in the edge of the yard at evening, under the reaching China Berry tree, in the belled gray country silence, mother and father sitting in the cool on the wash bench, the black iron wash pot, three-legged and belly burnt, the other side of the path circling the yard. Under the outer arms of the China Berry umbrella, the wooden wide bench, soap-slick, dry, galvanized tubs upside down, cold to touch in the summer dusk, contained, exact inner dreams. We stand in our diagonal of height, Mona singing her clear gospel-singing happy soprano, devotional gems, songs of deliverance, glory trains, and royal telephones. Vida, her thin-faced, pale alto, self-taught, coming like whippoorwills, weary with sleep, next in height. And I, shortest, too young to more than keep the tune, singing together, together to the sandhill fields, to whatever moves in with night over the pines, coming from where in the west the far great cherry on the ditch bank stands, standing out black against the farther lower pines, together to the tired, song-starved mother, my friend is the king, to the father of three gray faces under the darkening tree, three here, three in graves, together to the sleeping coops and quiet barns. Oh, where is my wandering boy tonight? On the top of Mount Zion is a city. Three singing in the deep-lying Carolina country, far from town. Prettiest thing I ever heard. Eyes lost in the green blood of night's tears, of old inherited sorrows. Grainy and wasted as the land, beautiful, wasted as the years in the mother's face, in the father's hands.
Alex Albright reading China Berry by A.R. Ammons, who is one of our North Carolina literary lights. Alex, he has this great ability. I think he's one of the masters at ambiguity in terms of punctuation. You're not quite sure whether it's the antecedent or somehow the subject of the next clause. It's brilliant work, and you have to read it 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah. He was totally obsessed with the colon, and he uses lots of colons, and some of his poems have no end punctuation. The work on the collected Ammons is kind of curious. Robert West is putting that together, and he's having a look at various published versions of poems to see is there a period here or not. So it does make for a delightful read. I should have mentioned that poem I just read, Vida Ammons Cox is still living in Clarkton. She's the last of Archie's siblings, and I don't know if she'll hear this show live, but I know she'll hear it archived at the library down there in Columbus County, where they have an A.R. Ammons poetry competition, and his name is very much alive and well at Columbus County. Yeah.
So, Roger, I guess that brings us to the question of his influence on the world of poetry. How would you describe it?
Well, I think that one of his great contributions has been, and Alex alluded to this, a sort of widening or expansion of the language of poetry to include the language of science, for example, all of those very technical terms that you get in a poem like him. He found a kind of music and poetry in that language and was able to incorporate it in such a way that that music comes through very, very powerfully. I think a lot of poets are now exploring that that realm, the realm of science, as it opens onto large questions about the universe. So that's one of his major contributions. But there are many others. I could talk, of course, for forever about the way he blends different tones, the tone of reverence, which suddenly gives way to a tone of humor, sometimes very bawdy, racy humor. He's constantly moving around between different styles and tones.
Alex?
Yeah, it's the language of science. Also, it's that kind of obscure language that we don't think of in poems. And in the same way, you know, one of his mule poems, it references the white-bloomed briars, wet crabgrass, cattails, and rusting ferns. That kind of stuff that people don't pay attention to, that, you know, that's part of our landscape and it becomes part of who we are. And I think that the attention that he calls to that is kind of transcendental. It harkens back to the great poets or the writers of the 19th century and reminds us of Whitman and Emerson and folks like that.
Yeah, what's that quote that's attributed to him? Anything looked at closely becomes wonderful. Did he say that?
Yeah. It's...
Roger, we're talking about this love of North Carolina. We hear a lot of it evoked in his poems, and it evokes a picture in us when we hear it. But he went to Cornell. How did he come to teach at Cornell?
Well, it was a kind of roundabout route. He, as Alex said, he spent, I think, almost 12 years in New Jersey, mostly because that's where his wife's family had come from. He met his wife at Wake Forest. Then they spent a couple of years in Berkeley at graduate school, and then he moved back to work for his wife's father's medical glass company. And while he was there, he began to write and publish his poetry. And at a certain point, he was invited to Cornell to give a reading. And they just absolutely fell in love with him there and offered him a job. And that's where he stayed. He really put roots down there, despite many opportunities to go elsewhere. I think Ithaca and Cornell became a very important landscape for him, not that it could ever completely take the place of North Carolina.
Well, was he comfortable there? You talked about his complex relationship with his poor, the poverty that he grew up in. Was he comfortable up north and at Cornell?
I think he actually enjoyed being an outsider, and that may be another reason why he chose not to resettle in North Carolina. He liked feeling that he was a bit of a fish out of water, and that he was different from everybody around him. He prized difference and eccentricity, and he liked feeling that he represented something unusual in his hometown.
Will you read a poem for us?
Absolutely. I'd love to read a poem called Mechanism, which I think is a wonderful example of how he combines a kind of scientific perspective with attention to a very ordinary, in this case, bird, a creature. This poem is called Mechanism. Honor a going thing, goldfinch, corporation, tree, morality, any working order, animate or inanimate. It has managed, directed balance. The incoming and outgoing energies are working right. Some energy left to the mechanism, some ash. Enough energy held to maintain the order and repair. Assure further consumption of entropy, expending energy to strengthen order. Honor the persisting reactor, the container of change, the moderator. The yellow bird flashes black wing bars in the new leaving wild cherry bushes by the bay, startles the hawk with beauty, flitting to a branch where flash vanishes into stillness, hawk addled by the sudden loss of sight. Honor the chemistries, platelets, hemoglobin, kinetics, the light-sensitive iris, the enzymic intricacies of control, the gastric transformations, seed dissolved to acrid liquors, synthesized into chirp, vitreous humor, knowledge, blood compulsion, instinct. Honor the unique genes, molecules that reproduce themselves, divide into sets, the nucleic grain transmitted in slow change through ages of rising and falling form, some cells set aside for the special work, mind or perception rising into orders of courtship, territorial rights, mind rising from the physical chemistries to guarantee that genes will be exchanged, male and female met, the satisfactions cloaking a deeper racial satisfaction, heat kept by a feathered skin, the living alembic, body heat maintained, Bunsen burner under the flask, so the chemistries can proceed, reaction rates interdependent, self-adjusting with optimum efficiency, the vessel firm, the flames staying, isolated, contained reactions, the precise and necessary worked out of random, reproducible, the handiwork redeemed from chance, while the goldfinch, unconscious of the billion operations that stay its form, flashes, chirping, not a great songster, in the bay cherry bushes, wild of leaf.
Roger Gilbert reading the poem called Mechanism by A.R. Ammons, one of our literary lights. What's brilliant to me about that poem is the way he can describe, and I mean, anytime you can use enzymic and gastric in a poem, first of all, I think three cheers. But it, what's left open is how this all these mechanisms in science and chemistry lead to these emotional and incredible instinctive things that you see in nature. That's all sort of in outline and kind of his genius. Is he a philosophical poet, I guess, in some ways?
Certainly, yes. I think deeply philosophical. The scene that Roger talked about, where the sort of religious epiphany, in the same notebook, I think that's at Chapel Hill, he talks about seeing a line in the distance on that island and thinking about how it seems fixed, and the closer you get to it, the more you see that it has shape and individuality. And that's a kind of a controlling metaphor in his book Garbage, where he's thinking about piles of garbage and at what point does the pile end, and is this garbage? Has it escaped? Once it escapes from the pile, is it still garbage, or has it gone back into the world now, and we have to push it back into a pile of garbage? And it's just one wonderful thought.
Yeah. Thank you for shedding light on our literary light. Alex Albright, Roger Gilbert joined me to talk about the poetry of A.R. Ammons, who was from Whiteville and would have been 85 today. Alex and Roger, thanks for being on the program.
Hey, thanks. And thank you for doing this. Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah.
Alex Albright, a poet and editor and professor at ECU. Roger Gilbert is a professor of English at Cornell in Ithaca, author of the upcoming critical biography of A.R. Ammons. Coming up after a short break, the newly remodeled Murphy School hosts an old-time radio show. Stay tuned.